there is no truth superior to him. King Zeno was imitating the Supreme Personality of Godhead and was also speaking out of false pride, presenting himself as the Supreme Lord. These are all characteristics of a demonic person. So, here it has been very nicely described through King Zeno, the ideal demoniac person, a person who tries to compete with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or tries to take over the position of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And actually, this demoniac tendencies are present in every living entity in the material platform. Actually, we fell down into the material platform because of our envy of Krishna. And here it has been pointed out that how a person becomes extremely envious of Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He is the Supreme Proprietor and He is the Supreme Enjoyer. But when we want to become the Supreme Proprietor and Supreme Enjoyer, we fall into this material platform. It has been very nicely described in Chaitanya Charitamrita, in Prema Vivarta by Jagadananda Pandit. Says, Krishna bhuli shei jeev, anadi bohir mukh, atoeb maya tare daya samsar dukkha. When a living entity forgets Krishna, his vision or his consciousness then is projected to the external energy of Krishna. And then maya begins to punish him with all kinds of materialistic distresses. Atoeb maya tare daya samsar dukkha. Krishna bohir mukh hoya bhogobancha kare nikatastho maya tare japotiya dhare. When a living entity forgets Krishna and desires to enjoy the material nature or Krishna's external energy, then immediately maya grabs him. Maya tare japotiya dhare. Maya, who is standing close by, as soon as the living entity turns his face away from Krishna, then immediately maya grabs him. It's like a crocodile in the water. Like as soon as a person goes into the water, goes near the water, then immediately maya, like a crocodile, grabs him. And it's practically impossible to get out of the clutches of maya. It has further been analytically explained that how it happens, that has been explained, that a living entity can project his consciousness either towards Krishna or away from Krishna. Living entity is very minute and his consciousness is like a ray. Like our consciousness is actually like a ray of, like a ray. It's just one pointed. It can be projected onto one point. Now, when we point our consciousness or project our consciousness onto Krishna, then we remain in Krishna's internal energy. But when we project our consciousness away from Krishna, when we forget Krishna, that means we project our consciousness away from Krishna, then our consciousness is projected onto Krishna's external energy. Because everything is either Krishna's internal energy or Krishna's external energy. So when we project our consciousness onto Krishna's external energy, that external energy is inferior by nature. Prakritic অপরয়াম ইতস্তন্নাম প্রকৃতি বৃদ্ধি নেপরাম জীবভূতাং মহাবাহ যজেদং ভার্যতে জগৎ। ইন ভগবদ গীতা কৃষ্ণ এক্সপ্লেইন দ্য মেটেরিয়াল নেচার, ইট ইজ দিস মেটেরিয়াল নেচার দ্যাট ইজ মেড অফ এইট ডিফারেন্ট এলিমেন্টস, নেমলি earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence and false ego. This prakriti or this bhinna prakriti is separated from me. This energy, the material energy, is inferior in quality. Bhinna prakriti rashtadha. And then Krishna says, Aparayam itastannam. This material energy is inferior. But beyond this inferior material energy, there is a superior energy of mind. Aparayam itastu annam prakritim vidhi me param. There is a superior energy of mind. And jiva bhutam mahabaho. And the living entities are coming from that superior energy of Krishna. And jajidam dharjate jagat. And these living entities are sustaining this material nature. This material nature is sustained by the living entities. So, these living entities are we ourselves, the spirit souls. We are superior in quality, but this material nature is inferior. And as soon as the living entity comes in contact with the inferior material nature, he develops the false ego. And false ego means wrong identity, a misconception about oneself. Ego means identity and false means wrong. So we develop a misconception about ourselves, or we develop a wrong identity. Like actually, we all are servants of Krishna. In our constitutional position, we all are servants of Krishna. Jive sharup hai, Krishna nitya rasa. But as soon as we come in contact with the material nature, we develop a tendency to lord over the material nature, because it is a natural tendency of the superior to dominate over the inferior. So as soon as the superior living entity comes in contact with the inferior material nature, he wants to dominate over this material nature. And he begins to think that he is the Lord. Forgetting himself to be the servant, he begins to think that he is the Lord and Master. He is the enjoyer. He is the proprietor. So that concept that I am the Lord, bhokta cha prabhureva cha, that I am the enjoyer and I am the master, I am the Lord. That is the misconception, and that is the false identity of false ego. And that is the first covering of the spirit soul. As soon as the spirit soul comes in contact with the material nature, he immediately gets the covering of the material, first covering of the material nature of false ego, or wrong identity, that I am the Lord. And then he begins to plan how he is going to enjoy this material nature. And that gives him the second covering. And what is that covering called? Panduraj Prabhu, do you know? What is the second covering? That's called the covering of intelligence. He begins to plan, I am going to enjoy the material nature this way or that way. So that is the covering of intelligence. And then his consciousness constantly flows towards the material direction, towards the material nature, through the third covering of material nature called mind. So this way, with the mind, intelligence and false ego, he develops a subtle body. But this subtle body is not complete in itself to give him the feeling that he is the enjoyer. So he wants to have then material nature actually provides him with a gross body. And that gross body is made of five gross elements, namely earth, water, fire, air and ether. And this way, the crocodile of material nature grabs him very tightly and keeps him imprisoned in the material nature with a subtle body and a gross body. So it is a natural, as soon as the living entity comes in contact with the material nature, or as soon as he projects his consciousness onto the material nature, he becomes trapped by the material nature. So this is how we all got entrapped in this material nature. Now if we want to get out of this material nature, what we must do? We must project our consciousness towards Krishna's external energy. Towards Krishna's internal energy. By coming in contact with Krishna's external energy, we have become trapped. We have become entangled. We have become bound. Now if we want to become released from Krishna's external energy, then we must project our consciousness onto Krishna's internal energy. And projection of our consciousness onto Krishna's internal energy is called devotional service. Antaranga prakriti means internal energy, and bohiranga prakriti means external energy. External energy causes us the miserable bondage in the material nature, and our involvement in Krishna's internal potency causes us the joy that we are searching for. Both the energies are diametrically opposite. Material nature is full of misery. And what is the opposite concept of misery? The opposite concept of misery is joy or bliss. So as soon as we become involved in Krishna's internal energy, we become blissful. We become joyful. And the height of material involvement is called the demoniac propensity, demoniac tendency. That's what we saw. We found here in the character of King Vena. In the material nature, everyone thinks that I am the supreme enjoyer, I am the supreme lord. He actually takes over Krishna's position, or tries to take over Krishna's position. And in a way, everyone is thinking that he is the supreme proprietor, he is the supreme lord. Because that is the natural tendency of a living entity in the material nature. But we display we display this tendency or this propensity of ours according to the strength or power that we have. A person in a material platform, if he is very powerful, then he displays this tendency more acutely, more intensely. And if he is weak, then he displays it to a lesser degree. But the tendency is always there. Even a beggar in the street thinks that if I get a lot of money, then I will lord over the material nature. Even an ant thinks that way. That I am actually the lord and master of everything. After all, everybody thinks that he is the center of everything in the material nature. That I am the center and everything is actually meant for my enjoyment. But the spiritual concept is diametrically opposite to this concept. The spiritual concept is Krishna is the supreme proprietor, Krishna is the supreme enjoyer, and I am his eternal servant. So that is the difference between material concept and spiritual concept. The material concept is I am the center, spiritual nature is Krishna is the center. So if we want to get freed from this material bondage, then we have to change our consciousness. And the process of changing our consciousness is by Krishna consciousness, by becoming Krishna conscious. We must become aware of Krishna. That Krishna is the center of everything and everything is meant for Krishna's enjoyment. Otherwise, there is no way we can get out of this material bondage. And as we become Krishna conscious, as we place Krishna in the center, then we become free from material bondage. It's just a matter of changing our consciousness. Withdrawing our consciousness from Maya, we must project our consciousness onto Krishna or Krishna's internal energy. And our first involvement in Krishna's internal energy is through the knowledge of the spiritual nature and the association of Vaishnavas. That's what Prabhupada pointed out. The two most important things are his books and the association of devotees, that is this International Society for Krishna Consciousness. One may question how by associating with the devotees we become free from material bondage. By association with the devotees we become aware of the beauty of the spiritual nature. Because the devotees who are Krishna conscious, their association is so wonderful that it makes us interested to go back to Godhead or remain in their association. And their association is non-different from the spiritual sky. When we are in the association of Vaishnavas, we are actually in the spiritual sky, because then our consciousness is projected onto Krishna or Krishna's internal potency. Matsitta madgata prana bodhayantasya parasparam pathayantasya maangnitam tushyanticha ramanticha. When devotees associate, what they do? Matsitta madgata prana, the devotees are Krishna conscious. Their heart is projected onto Krishna. Madgata. Gata, mat, here Krishna is pointing out, mat means to me. And gata means going. Devotee's consciousness is constantly going towards Krishna. And bodhayantasya parasparam, they understand each other because they have a common interest. Devotees have common interest, that is, their interest is Krishna. And kathayantasya maam nittam, they always talk about me. And tushyanticha, ramanticha, that is the source of their satisfaction and enjoyment. Devotees derive enjoyment by talking about Krishna or by becoming aware of Krishna's spiritual position, supreme spiritual position. But the demons, they want to become the controller. But are we the controller? Can the living entity ever be the controller? No. Krishna is saying in Bhagavad Gita, Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasah ahankara dimurhatma kartahamiti manate. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karmani sarvasah. In this material nature, everything is happening by the arrangement of the modes of material nature and the activities of the living entity. As we act, accordingly we produce the reactions. To every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So as we act, our actions are producing the reactions, or making us liable to the reactions. And those reactions are taking place in the different modes. Our actions are reflected onto different modes. When our activities are in the mode of goodness, we get good results. When we act in the mode of passion, then we get passionate results. And when we act in the mode of ignorance, we get miserable results. So this is how every living entity is becoming liable to his actions. As you sow, so shall you reap. as we act accordingly, we will get the results. So everyone is actually experiencing or enjoying or suffering the reactions of his actions. We are not controllers. We are simply led to different experiences in the material nature according to our previous activities. But ahankaro bimhuratma, being bewildered by the false ego, ahankar means false ego, being bewildered by false ego, living entities think that they are the doers, they are the controllers. Karta hamiti mannate. Karta means the doer or the controller. So, this is the condition that we are in. But if we want to become devotees, then we must give up that tendency. If we want to go back to Godhead, then we must give up the tendency of controlling. We must not think that we are the doers. We must understand that everything is happening according to our past karma, and ultimately everything is happening according to Krishna's desire. Devotees always surrender to depend upon Krishna. Devotees, those who are surrendered to Krishna, they simply depend upon Krishna. When they enjoy when they experience some pleasing experiences, then they think that, oh, Krishna is so kind, that Krishna is giving me so many nice experiences. And when he suffers, then he thinks that I must have done something wrong in the past, and that's why I'm suffering. He never complains. He simply accepts everything according to Krishna's arrangements. And as a matter of fact, if we look at things from a broader perspective of time, then we can see that actually everything is arranged for our benefit. Everything is arranged in such a way that we are never actually a loser. Everything is actually for our benefit. And Vedic scriptures actually help us to understand that very much. Like, for that respect, Mahabharata or Srimad Bhagavatam is very, is very beneficial. They give us the understanding very clearly. Like the other day I was watching the film Sita's Sainbara, Sita's Wedding. And there it shows that when Ram killed the demon called Taraka, after being killed by Ramchandra, she got her divine form. And she was actually cursed and she became a demoness. And then she was killed by Ramchandra and she became liberated. She got back her original form. She became released from the curse. Now apparently it seems that she died. It must have been so bad. She was dead. But then we realize that actually her death was a blessing. She got released from her miserable existence of a demoness. King Bharat became a deer in his next life. He was a king, he gave up everything and he became an ascetic. He was in the forest and for some reason, being attached to a deer, a fawn, he became attached to the fawn, and in his next life he became a deer. And apparently it seems, oh, it was such a miserable thing. That why King Bharat, who was such an elevated devotee, became a deer? But then when we go further, then we see that in next life, King Bharat, that deer, became Jar Bharat. Now, by the arrangements of Krishna, in the body of a deer, all his previous karmas were nullified, and in his next life he was born as a pure devotee. So actually, in the material nature, everything that happens is for our benefit. And there are so many examples. Another very nice example is Bhishma Dev. We can even go beyond Bhishma. We can consider Bhishma's father, King Shantanu. In his previous life, he was a great king. He performed a lot of pious activities, and due to his pious activities, he was elevated to Brahma Loka, far beyond heavenly planets, the highest region in the material nature, the abode of Lord Brahma. And when he was in Brahma Loka, at that time, Mother Ganges came to wash, Mother Ganges came carrying the water from the lotus feet of the Lord. And at that time, in a breeze, her sari got little disheveled and her breast became exposed. And that king, he just glanced at her at that time. And Brahma immediately detected that. Brahma said that you have come to Brahma Loka, but you are still maintaining the characteristics of a mundane person, an earthly person. You are still attracted to a woman form. And he said, you are not fit to remain in Brahma Loka. You just go back to the earth planet. So in his next life, he fell down as King Shantanu to become a king, a very great king. And because he desired Mother Ganga, the Mother Ganges, the Ganges also came down and became his wife, just to fulfill his desire. Bhishma, then Ganga, in the meantime, another thing happened. There were eight Basus, eight demigods, particular demigods, known as Ashtabasus or eight Basus. They were traveling with their wives. And then they came in their celestial chariot or celestial aeroplane. And when they were passing by Vasishtha's ashram, they saw the Suraghi cow. Vasishtha had a Suraghi cow, Samdhenu. And that one of the wives of the Vasus who became very attracted to the cow, and she wanted to have the cow. And actually she wanted to have it to present it to one of her friends in the earth planet. So she requested her husband that please get me that cow. So her husband, the Vasu, tried to persuade her not to want such a thing, because Vasishtha is a great sage, and if he gets to know that they stole the cow, he would be very upset. But she kept on nagging, typical to a woman. And then finally, her husband, along with the other Vasus, stole the cow. And when Vasishtha came back, he saw that the cow was missing. Suraghi was missing. So, in his divine vision, he could see what actually happened. He just projected his vision onto his heart, and he saw that this Vasu actually stole the cow. So he immediately cursed them, that since you have behaved in such a way, you will fall down and be born as human beings. So they got to know about the curse. The eight Vasus got to know about the curse. And they came to Vasishtha and begged him to withdraw his curse. So finally Vasishtha said, look, when I curse, it's going to happen. My word is not going to go in vain. But if Mother Ganges agrees to become your mother, then right after your birth, you'll become delivered. But the one who stole the cow, he'll have to remain in the earth planet for many, many years. So they approached Mother Ganges and persuaded Mother Ganges to come down to the earth planet and become their mother. So Mother Ganges also, by the arrangement, previous arrangement, had to get married to King Shantanu. So she agreed, she came down to earth planet, got married to King Shantanu. But on one condition. There was one condition. The condition was that King Shantanu will never prevent her from doing anything that she desired. And never will question why she was behaving in such a way. So King Shantanu was so enamored by her beauty that he agreed. He said, any condition, I am agreeable. So then, in due course of time, one son was born. And who was that son? The son was none other than one of the 8 Vasus. And what Mother Ganges did, she just, right after the birth of the child, she took the child and went to the Ganges and dropped him there. Killed him. So apparently it seems to be such a heinous act. Such a terrible thing to do. Mother killing her own child. But actually this was the arrangement of the providence. Like this boy had to go back. Like they just came being cursed to the earth planet, and right after that he went back to his position as a Vasu in the heavenly planet. This way, one after another, 7 children were born, and Ganga killed them right after their birth. And King Shantanu couldn't stop her, because he remembered that this was the condition, that he will never question her actions and never prevent her from acting according to her will. But when the 8th child was born, King Shantanu could not control himself. When Ganga was carrying the child to the river Ganges, King Shantanu said, how can you do that? How can you? Please, don't be so cruel, don't kill your children like this. So Ganga says, okay, fine, so keep your child, but I am going. You broke your promise. So apparently it was all these things are happening this way. But when you go back into time, then you can see why it was happening like that. And this child was destined to remain on the earth planet for many, many years. So Ganga left, and Ganga said that since this child cannot stay without me, I will take him back with me to the heavenly planet, and when he grows up, then I'll send him back to you. So Ganga disappeared with the child. And then after 16 years, the child was given back to the king. And then Bhishma, this son of Shantanu and Ganga, he was a great friend of his father. The king Shantanu and Bhishma were always together, and they were actually inseparable. Now one day, King Shantanu went hunting, and he came across a very beautiful girl called Shottavati. And he immediately fell in love with her, and he asked her who she was, and she told him that she was actually the daughter of the king of the fishermen. So Shantanu went to the king of the fishermen, Dhivara Raj, and begged him to offer his daughter to him. Then the king of the fishermen said, I can give you my daughter in one condition, that the first son of my daughter will become the successor to your throne. And King Shantanu said, look, that's not possible because I already have a son who has already been coronated as the crown prince. So he said, well, then forget my daughter. If you can't agree with this condition, then you can't get my daughter. So King Shantanu went back, but he was very depressed. His heart was afflicted. And Bhishma noticed that and he was wondering what actually happened to his father. And then he asked the charioteer what happened, and from the charioteer he got to know that the father actually approached this girl and couldn't get this girl, so that's why he is feeling distressed or depressed. So then King Shantanu, Bhishma immediately went to the king of the fishermen and he said, look, my father wanted to marry your daughter, so why are you refusing? And he said that I have a condition, and that is her son should become the successor to the throne. Then Bhishma said, okay, fine, I withdraw my claim to the throne and your daughter's son will become the king, future king. And then the king of the fishermen said, fine, but what about the next generation or next generation? Like, you may not claim your right on the throne, but your children in future may demand that they are the successor to the throne. And Bhishma said, okay, in that case I'll never get married. So he took the vow of celibacy all his life. And he got the daughter, of the fisherman and brought her to the palace to be wedded to his father. And when King Shantanu got to know about that, he became very pleased. And he blessed Bhishma that he will die only when he desires to die, not otherwise. He will be immortal, but only if he desires to die, then only he will die, not otherwise. So this way we can see that how Bhishma's stay on this planet became secure. That actually blessed him that he would live for a long, long time. But actually it was a curse by Vasishtha that he will stay on the earth planet for many, many years. So when we look at things from a broader perspective, from a broader concept of time, then you can see everything is actually for our benefit. Everything that happens is for our benefit. Nothing actually is bad for us. But when you become impatient with the desire to enjoy this material nature, then the trouble starts. So that's why a devotee who is very intelligent, he simply surrenders unto Krishna and he doesn't get affected by either pleasure or pain. Dukhe cha anudvigna mana, sukhe cha vigata spriha. He remains unperturbed in distress. When he is in distress, he remains unperturbed. He doesn't become disturbed in distress. And sukhe cha vigata spriha. And when he is enjoying, he does not become attached to that enjoyment. When he is happy, when he is enjoying, then also he remains detached from that so-called happiness. And when he suffers or when he is in distress, he does not lament. He simply remains unaffected. After all, Krishna is explaining in Bhagavad Gita that this this concept of happiness and pain are nothing but different experiences in relation to our senses. Matra sparsha sukonteya shitoshna sukha dukkhada aroma payina nitya sthan sthiti kshesha bhavata. Matra sparsha sukanteya, shita ushna sukha dukhada. Happiness and cold, heat and cold, happiness and pain. These are nothing but different degrees of matra and sparsha. Different degrees of our sense perception. Our senses at certain point feel pleasant and at certain other degree it feels unpleasant. When it is very cold, when you are sitting by fire, it's a little warm, we feel very pleasing. But if we increase the degree of the fire, then when it starts burning us, then we don't feel the pleasure anymore. Then we become miserable again. Or it's very cold, very hot, and we are living in a adjusted air-conditioned room. It's cooler, outside, cooler atmosphere. We feel nice, pleasant. But if we increase the degree of cold, then it will become again very miserable for us. So this is the condition of our pleasure and pain in the material platform. So Krishna is advising us not to be affected by that. He says the tam titikshasya bharata, just tolerate them. Happiness and pain both should be tolerated. And that is the way we can become situated on the spiritual platform. Simply depending on Krishna, understanding that everything is happening according to His divine arrangement, and we must remain totally unaffected by all the happenings of the material nature. Hare Krishna. Does anybody have any questions? The false ego means misconception of our identity, right? I am Krishna's servant, right? But when we forget that I am Krishna's servant, and instead of that we begin to think that I am the Lord and Master of this material nature, that's the false ego, right? And then this is the first involvement in the material nature. Then we get further involved in the material nature. It becomes, then we and then it is the mind. Actually, it has been described that ultimately in the material nature there is this pradhan. The ultimate material substance is called pradhan or mahatattva. Right? And this mahatattva becomes intensified more and more, condensed. As it becomes condensed, it becomes one to another substance. The ahankar is actually a transformation of mahatattva, right? It becomes further intensified, becomes intelligence, material intelligence. It becomes further intensified, it becomes mind. It becomes further intensified, it becomes ether. It becomes further intensified, more intensified, it becomes air. it becomes even more intensified, it becomes fire. Further intensified, it becomes water, and further intensified, it becomes earth. So it's actually, ultimately, it is all transformation of the subtlest material substance called Mahatattva. And this Mahatattva ultimately is also a transformation of Brahma, the spiritual energy. Right? So that's why ultimately everything is a transformation of Brahma. Sarvam Khalidam Brahma. Everything is nothing but transformation of Brahma or spiritual energy. Is it clear? Maybe we can discuss further if you have further questions. Right. Yeah. Right. Yes. When you look at it from a material direction, from material perspective, it is kind of chronological. Right? But when you look at it from the absolute perspective, then actually time also is a material concept. Right? So it is just, you know, like it's a different dimension altogether. Right? Apparently, it seems, you know, like from a material direction, it is chronological. Because the first involvement, or first thing that happens, is the covering of false ego, misconception of ourselves. Right? And then, because unless that misconception is there, the intelligence, material intelligence cannot function. Right? So first, it has to be that false identity. And then, you see, the covering of intelligence. And so on and so forth. And beg your pardon? The time also is, so that's why I said the chronological, this concept, chronological concept is a material concept. Because the time is a material concept. Prabhupada said that when we go back to spiritual nature, then everything that happened in the material nature, in our material existence, appears to be like a dream. Right? Like it is a different dimension altogether. It is, you know, then it is not existing anymore. Only a concept. Right? And actually material nature is a concept. Yeah. In the spiritual nature, there is no room to think. There is no possibility of thinking that I am not the servant of Krishna. In the spiritual nature, everyone is thinking that he is the servant of Krishna. So, I am not the servant of Krishna. That concept comes in the material platform. Yeah, the border is the neutrality, the tatastha or marginal condition. Actually, we forget the spiritual. First thing that happens is that first we become complete. We forget the spiritual nature, and then we become aware of the material nature. And that state, region of forgetfulness, is called Sushupti, or you know, so it's also called Viraja, or it can also be defined as Brahma Jyoti. That is the condition, that is the reason when living entity forgets his spiritual existence and becomes involved in the material nature. Yeah. I couldn't understand.
If we are full of knowledge in the spiritual nature.
Krishna, well, this is a question that we are often confronted with. I'm sure you also have been confronted with this question. And Prabhupada's answer to that is, Krishna has given the living entity the independence to decide for himself what he wants, whether he wants to be with Krishna or whether he wants to be away from Krishna. Now he has this minute independence. And if he misuses that independence, then he falls into the material nature. With his independence, if he decides that I am not going to serve Krishna, right, then immediately he gets entangled by the material nature. As it has been described in Prema Vivarta, the Maya who is standing very nearby immediately grabs him. But of course there are other concepts also. Prabhupada said that before a living entity leaves the spiritual side, Krishna tells him not to go. So it just doesn't happen like that. You know, living entity is often reminded by Krishna, don't go, don't go. But it still, if the living entity wants to go away from Krishna, then who can help him? So that is the meaning of independence. Yes, Prabhupada said that everybody is related to Krishna in one of the five mellows. Shanto, Dasya, Shakho, Vatsya, and Madhu. Because our mellows, in our constitutional position, our mellows are fixed. Right? So we were related to Krishna. If we are not related to Krishna, then how can we have, you know, how can he be situated in particular mellows of relationship? So the understanding is that, yes, we all have a relationship with Krishna. But now we forgot about that relationship. But when we wake up from our slumber, right, from our ignorance, then we become immediately aware of our relationship with Krishna. Well, I mean, it's difficult, you see, to just, you know, completely clarify this point, because it is a different dimension altogether. About that nature, we do not have any understanding whatsoever. Now we are here, right? So now let us get out of here. So when we get out of here and go over there, then automatically we become aware of our constitutional position. But Prabhupada said that living entity has his relationship. Every living entity has his relationship with Krishna. Not Mayavadis. You see, Mayavadis cannot stay in the spiritual nature. Mayavadis are offensive to Krishna. That's why they cannot stay in the spiritual nature. But yes, Brahma Jyoti is actually the living entity. Because in the spiritual nature, what to talk about Brahma Jyoti? Everything is conscious. Everything is spirit soul. Right? So Brahma Jyoti is also spirit souls, but in Brahma Jyoti they do not have their awareness of their relationship with Krishna or Narayana. They are aware of their existence, they are conscious of their existence, but they do not know about their relationship with Vaikuntha because they do not have the service attitude. unless you begin to serve, you cannot enter into Vaikuntha or Vrindavan. You see, we are talking about a nature which is beyond our sense, beyond our intellectual perception. But it's some, at one point I read that even from Brahmajyoti, a living entity can go back to Godhead, provided he is helped by a devotee. If a Vaishnava, if that particular spirit soul receives the causeless mercy of a Vaishnava, then he can become aware of his relationship in servitorship to Krishna, and he can go back to Vaikuntha. But generally, let's leave it at that. See, I mean, that's a different dimension altogether, and we cannot really speculate on that. Like, as I said, let us first go back there, and then we'll find out. Right now, let's just endeavor to get out of here. It is said that in Krishna Loka, Shanto Rosh, the neutrality is not manifest. Little bit of dasya, servitorship is there. But the predominating, the prominent mellows there are friendship, parental, and conjugal. And the essential mellow is the conjugal. In spiritual sky, apparent in Vrindavan, what apparently appears to be in Shanto Rosh or in neutrality are actually in Shakra and Vatsala. Like the land in Vrindavan are actually related to Krishna in friendship. The trees there are mostly in friendship. The cows there are in parental. And Yamuna is in friendship. So this is, in Vrindavan, everything is animate, everything is conscious. And everyone there is related to Krishna, mainly in Shakha, Vatsala, and Madhu. Yeah. No, it begins with, no, not really. Actually, the relationship begins with dasya. In Shanto, there is no relationship, it's neutral. Shantarasa is neutral. You are aware of Krishna, but you do not have any exchange with Krishna. The exchange begins with servitorship. But then, it may gradually take the person to a higher mellow where he is constitutionally situated. He starts with servitorship, but then if he is in, say, friendship, then ultimately he will be situated in friendship or parental, so and so forth. Everybody? Yeah, in Vrindavan, yes. But in Vaikuntha, it's mostly neutrality and servitorship. In Vaikuntha, it is servitorship. I'm not so much neutrality, but actually servitorship. But in Vrindavan, it is... Servitorship is very little servitorship is there. In Vrindavan, Krishna has very few servants. Raktok and Patrak. But mostly friends, parents, cowherd them, the lovers.
In fact, a lot of questions. Yeah.
Service means servitorship begins with Dasharaj. But then the mellow that I am Krishna's servant, this feeling becomes intensified, and then this mellow is transformed into Shakha. Like then Krishna receives you as equal. I mean, of course we have to understand that all these mellows are actually constant.
Right.
One who is in servitorship will remain in servitorship.
Right.
But one who is in mellow of friendship, then he may begin with servitorship.
Right.
He may begin with by becoming a servant of Krishna. But then Krishna makes him his friend. He says, actually, you are equal. You are not subordinate to me. You are not inferior to me. We are equal. So let's play.
Right?
And then, you see, the servitorship this way, the friendship, ultimately comes to Balaram, who is actually the topmost of all the friends, topmost of all the Gopobalakas, right? Cowherd boys. The leader of the cowherd boys is Balaram. Now Balaram is Krishna's elder brother, right? So in Balaram, servitorship, friendship is transformed into parental, because Balaram, being the elder brother, treats Krishna as his junior, right? Like his younger brother, He is affectionate like the elder brother. And then, parental, the devotees become senior to Krishna. And Krishna becomes junior. The devotees become Krishna's mother and father, and Krishna becomes just a little boy. So this is how, you see, like, different mellows have been defined. Actually, this has been very nicely defined by Sanatan Goswami. The different mellows and their elevation. You see, mind is the seat of consciousness, or you can say mind is the seat of our senses, or seat of our thought, right? And intelligence is the faculty to correlate our thoughts. You see, our experiences are stored in the memory, right, which is the mind. But intelligence is the faculty to correlate, interrelate between different experiences that are stored in the mind. Right? Is that clear? You see, intelligence is not exactly mind. Intelligence is the ability to correlate. Like you have one experience, A, and you have another experience, B, and you have experience, C. Now there are three separate experiences. But with your intelligence, you make permutations and combinations between these three memories. Right? So that is the faculty of intelligence.
Your mind can think of things, or I'd like to enjoy this,
Thinking, feeling, and willing. Yeah. Yeah. Okay, go ahead. Not really. You see, the mind's business, as it has been described, is shankalpa and vikalpa. Mind is capable of doing only two things, accept and reject. You see, our experiences, our perceptions, we accept some, we reject. That is what mind can do, right? But what to accept and why to accept, what will be beneficial for me to accept and what we should reject, that, you know, what I should and what I should not, is done by intelligence. Yeah, it is subtle, naturally. It is subtle. Anyway, maybe this we can discuss separately, because the okay, Krishna Sadhu Prabhu. What is that? Intuition. Intuition is actually the ability to project our consciousness into past and future. The ability to project our consciousness into future, that is the intuition. Like something will happen in future. Where it is placed. I never really thought of it earlier. Or never really read it. Because intuition, there is no in the Vedic scriptures, there is no specific explanation of intuition as such. But they have described that when one is situated on an elevated consciousness, then he can see time in a broader concept. Like he can see the past, present and future. Right? So they actually have the ability, what, not to talk of, not to imagine about things that they may happen, but they can see what will happen, and also they can see what has happened in the past. So that ability one has. That is a little bit of ability to project one's consciousness into future. Right? That something will happen in the future. Right? Yes, the yogis actually can see and what will happen thousands and thousands of years from now. Right? Like in the stages of Naimisharana, they knew what's going to happen in the age of Kali. So they would perform the yoga to deliver the people from the of this age. Yeah. To be unaffected. It is actually, you know, it's a matter of elevation of consciousness. Right? Like, when you are in an elevated consciousness, then the happenings of this mundane world do not affect you. It's like, an example can be given. See, when you are a child, you are playing with your friends, and you begin to fight. And your friend, and in the course of fight, your cloth gets torn, and you begin to cry. You are so attached to your cloth that you think it's a part of yourself, right? And when even a button is torn, you think that something, as if something, some part of your body has been torn. But then you grow up, and you know your shirt gets torn, or you know your cloth gets torn. You do not care so much. You take it off and put on a new one. So that is, you know, like as we develop our consciousness, we tend to become less and less attached. So a person in a very gross material consciousness will be very, very attached to everything. But as he becomes elevated, then he becomes, you know, gradually detached. That has been said, described as bhakti parishanu bhavo. As one develops his devotion to the Lord, he naturally becomes disgusted with the material nature. So when you become disgusted, then nothing actually interests you of this material nature. So what's the question of being attached?
There are four points of fiction. One of them is doing mistakes.
Yeah.
And the devotee should be Krishna conscious. And how is it possible for him to make some mistakes? Is it other devotees and how is it possible for devotees?
Yeah. The thing is that devotees don't make mistakes, right? And even if he makes mistakes, it's Krishna's arrangement. So that is how a devotee takes it. It's not that being perfect means, you know, not, you know, making mistakes. Even in a perfect stage, you may make mistakes. A pure devotee may make mistakes. Right? But the perfection of a devotee is that he is 100% surrendered to Krishna. That is the perfection. Right? Perfection doesn't mean that you become the Lord and Master. Right? I will not make a mistake means that you become the controller yourself. But actually we do not become controller under any circumstances. Yes, we may make mistakes. But yes, we depend on Krishna. That is our perfection. Like apparently, Prabhupada sometimes, you know, some devotees, I remember, they were editing Prabhupada's books. And they came in contact with, in the course of editing Prabhupada's books, they were studying different other literatures. Or they were, you know, they became Sanskrit scholars. And then they became such big scholars that they begin to find faults, mistakes in Prabhupada's, you know, presentation. And they couldn't stay in the spiritual platform. They blew. There's so many people like that. Because, you know, they used to think that if Prabhupada is perfect, how Prabhupada is making mistakes. But Prabhupada's perfection is that he is 100% surrendered to Krishna. So the perfection of a devotee is in his surrender to Krishna. Okay, I can, you know, take it a little further. Somebody is warned not to do something, right? But he does it for the sake of Krishna. And in the course of doing it, he meets his end, right? Or meets his death. And when dying, he thinks, Krishna wants me to die now, so let me die, right? So is there any mistake in his action? No. First of all, he was not doing it for himself. He was doing it for Krishna. Right? Whatever he's doing for Krishna. Whereas Gandhi, he was not doing for Krishna. He was doing for himself. He thought that he will become a big leader. Right? Or he has become a big leader. He is the father of the nation. Right? So that is the difference. In a devotee, whatever he does is perfect because he surrendered to Krishna. Right. Right, but my point is, I mean, sometimes we may find the devotee is making some mistakes. But do we take it then that he is not a devotee or he is not perfect? Then how would we justify, you know, some mistakes in Prabhupada's, you know, that Prabhupada displayed? Like, I personally used to take it when I would hear Prabhupada, you know, quoting something wrong or so and so forth, I would think it's actually Prabhupada is testing my faith in him. And that, regarding that, I had a very wonderful experience towards the beginning of my contact with Prabhupada. Prabhupada, in the evening, Prabhupada was giving the darshan. And then Prabhupada, at that time Prabhupada actually made me his servant. I was not initiated, I just met Prabhupada. And he kept me with him. And Prabhupada told everyone to go to Arati, evening Arati. So everyone, we all left the room. We went to the evening Arati. And then I thought, now let me go to Prabhupada. Prabhupada is alone in the room. So I'll get some association of Prabhupada and maybe I can ask some questions. Or actually I wanted to ask Prabhupada whether he would give me initiation. So I went back to the room. And as soon as I went to the room, I saw Prabhupada was counting the money that he received as, you know, the offerings from different people. And my, you know, mundane, you know, vision got jolted a little bit. That why Prabhupada is counting money like this? And then immediately I warned myself. I said, don't try to understand the activities of a pure devotee. And I felt that actually, then right after that I felt, maybe Prabhupada is trying to test my faith, how much faith I have in him. At that time, if I saw some imperfection in Prabhupada's action, then I would have become unfortunate. So should we continue like this or? Okay. What's the proper mood we have? What did you ask? Like, devotees are rendering service to Krishna in Krishna consciousness. And because they are serving Krishna, they become friends. Right? So what's the mood they should have? Not necessarily. You see, it has been described that the devotees' relationship are in friendship. Devotees are friendly to each other, right? Because they are the servants of the same master. So that is the relationship between the devotees, right? And of course, it can intensify a little more and they can develop an affectionate relationship with some other devotees, right? The juniors, like the disciple, the guru is affectionate to his disciple. It's like parental relationship, right? So friendship, and at the most, you know, with the equal, this is friendship. With the junior, it is, you know, affection. Affection is an outcome of parental relationship. So that, you know, like it may be up to parental, but not beyond that. I mean, between devotees, there cannot be conjugal relationship. Familiarity is one thing and friendship is another thing. You see, devotees' friendship has been described as, you see, they have a common loving object. And that's why they become friendly. Like, devotees love Krishna. Their loving object is Krishna. Right? And that love for Krishna is reflected in their heart in the form of friendship in their dealings with each other. And that same love for Krishna is reflected in an innocent people as compassion. And that same love for Krishna is reflected on the demons or the offenders in the form of neglect. So it is the main criterion is love for Krishna, and that love is reflected onto different persons accordingly in the form of friendship, compassion and neglect. So I'll take last three questions. Regarding that, Prabhupada also gave an example that you see, our brain is like a motor, right? Now, the motor apparently runs the whole machine, right? But the motor itself doesn't run the machine. It is when the electricity is passed through the motor, then the motor begins to move, and then that movement of the motor makes the other parts of the machine move. So it is not the motor that actually runs the machine. So our brain is like the motor, but actually what makes the brain function is our consciousness. Right? Now, if the brain is damaged, then consciousness does not cannot function properly. Right? So that's what happens. Our brain got damaged. So that's why it's not functioning properly. But with Daksha, you see, his head got chopped off, right? But, you know, his spirit was there in the body still. So along with the spirit, the consciousness was there. And when a goat's head was placed in there, right, his consciousness kept on functioning still. Right? So that's the difference. Yes, Mother Arjuna? Okay. So, let's stop now then. Okay. I said, so first question, second, and now I said, oh, yours was not a question, yours was a request. Yeah, my friend. Whether the residents of Vaikuntha can go to Vrindavan. Yes, they can go only by special favor of Krishna and Krishna's devotees. Not otherwise. Vaikuntha Vasis generally cannot enter into Vrindavan. What to talk about the residents of Vaikuntha, even Lakshmi cannot go to Vrindavan. Right? Lakshmi wanted to become a gopi, right, and dance with Krishna. So this is going back to Chaitanya Charitamrita, as you say. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was in South India, he became the guest in the house of Gopal Bhatta's father. And Gopal Bhatta's father was a Ramanuji Vaishnava. Their worshipable lord is Lakshmi Narayan. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used to make fun of him, tease him. He said, your Lakshmi is so chaste, right? She is the best of all the chaste women. But why does your Lakshmi want to be with Krishna, that cowherd boy? If she is so chaste, why does she want to be with Krishna? And not only that, he performed so much austerities to be with Krishna in Vrindavan, but she could not even enter into Vrindavan, and she could not participate in Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan. So this way Mahaprabhu used to make fun of him. So then he asked Mahaprabhu, please tell me, you are Krishna himself, so you are the expert in all this subject, so maybe you can tell us. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said that Lakshmi performed austerities to become a gopi, but she did not surrender to a gopi. She didn't want to surrender to a gopi. That's why she could not enter into Vrindavan. But the Shrutis, they performed austerities to receive the mercy of the gopis. And that's why by receiving the mercy of the gopis, they got elevated to Vrindavan. So in order to enter into Vrindavan, we have to be surrendered to the inhabitants of Vrindavan. And by their mercy only we can enter into Vrindavan. Okay. Because Bhishma's relation to Krishna was not in the mood of Vrindavan. His relationship with Krishna was in the mood of Vaikuntha. Right? See, Bhishma was a demigod. Right? And as a demigod, his worshipable lord was